over the rocks scattered across the ground. Craig stopped it when the hatch to the center module was no more than 5 meters from the silent, squat Pathfinder. Grunting, straining, together they hoisted the machine up off the ground and with "Watch out for the shroud" and "Okay, I've got it," they lugged it to the lip of the hatch and rested it there. Then Craig climbed awkwardly inside the module, and with him pulling and Dex pushing, they shoved it safely inside. Sweat was stinging Dex's eyes as he sank down to a sitting position and rested the back of his helmet against one of the rover's metal wheels. "You okay?" Craig asked, hopping down from the hatch. For the first time in weeks, Dex noticed that a man jumps slower in Mars's light gravity than he would on Earth. "I'm fine," Dex answered. "Wish I could wipe my eyes, though."
"You mean you don't know how to wriggle your arm out of the sleeve and work a hand up past your neck ring?"
Dex blinked sweat away. "You mean you can?"
"Sure."
"You really can?"
"Sure," Craig said. "Only problem is it dislocates your shoulder doing it."
He burst into raucous laughter. Dex made a sour face, but it did no good since Wiley couldn't see it through the tinted visor.
"Come on," Craig said, offering a gloved hand to pull Dex up to his feet. "Let's get the little fella and then call it a day."
They trudged slowly over to the tiny Sojourner rover, still sitting faithfully with its proton X-ray spectrometer almost touching the bulbous rock named Yogi. It weighed less than 12 pounds on Mars, so Dex easily lifted it off the ground and turned to head back to the rover. He saw Craig bend down, a laborious job in the heart suit.
"What are you doing, Wiley?"
"Putting the marker down, so as people will be able to see where she sat."
"Oh, you do that with the Pathfinder, too?"
"Yep."
"What did you use for a marker?"
"Silver dollars."
Dex felt his eyes go wide.
"Silver dollars? What the hell are you doing with silver dollars out here?"
He sensed Wiley trying to shrug inside the suit.
"I always carry 'em, for luck. Brought 7 of 'em."
They were almost at the rover hatch. Dex looked at the spot where the Pathfinder had sat for nearly 3 decades. Sure enough, a bright new silver dollar rested there.
"Started carrying 'em when I was out on the oil rigs," Craig explained. "Guys would play cards off shift, and they didn't use chips, let me tell you. Hard cash or nothing. So I started toting some silver dollars with me."
Dex just shook his head.
"Jamie, I'm going to be sending you a half ton of documentation about how to make glass bricks out of in-situ materials," Pete Connors was saying.
Jamie grinned as he watched Connors' image on his laptop screen. A glass igloo would be the answer they needed for the greenhouse. It didn't even have to be an igloo, he thought, as Connors chattered on. "We could build a square enclosure around the greenhouse dome," Jamie said to himself, "then take the dome down." "Or maybe not," he mused. "The plastic dome can be polarized to make it opaque overnight. Keep the heat inside. Can't polarize glass bricks." He was about to split his screen and check on the technical data when Connors sighed wearily and his voice turned down a pitch. "Jamie, old man Trumbull is still pushing to get you out as mission director. It doesn't matter that Dex and Possum got through the storm okay. He wants your scalp, and he's pushing damned hard to get it." Jamie almost smiled at Connors' choice of words, then wondered in the back of his mind why he didn't mind the black astronaut using Native American similes, but it riled him when Dex Trumbull did. "Because you're not competing with Pete," he answered himself. "Because you've been through so much with him. Because he's your friend." Jamie listened to Connors' tale of woe to the end. Trumbull had called a special meeting of the ICU board. Li Chengdu had told the astronaut that funding for the next expedition was going to be decided at the meeting. The implication was clear. Either they remove Jamie from command, or Trumbull would turn off the money flow. When at last Connors had finished, Jamie transmitted, "Thanks for the information, Pete. Both the good news and the bad. I've sent the daily report to you on the data channel. Nothing outstanding to report except that Dex and Craig have picked up the Pathfinder hardware successfully. They'll start on their way back here tomorrow morning. Oh, by the way, Craig prefers to be called Wiley instead of Possum. He's a little touchy about that. Otherwise, we're all well and healthy here. That's all for now." Jamie was still in the comm center when Fuchida came in, limping slightly, and asked him to come to the biology lab. "As soon as Stacy comes back," Jamie replied. Fuchida nodded, almost bowed, and left. Nearly half an hour later, Jamie tapped lightly on the doorframe of the bio lab. Fuchida turned on his swivel stool and swiftly got to his feet. "Sit, Mitsuo. Sit down and take it easy," Jamie said, pulling up the other stool to sit beside the biologist. Fuchida sat, but his back remained rigid. He glanced at the open doorway, then reached across the lab bench and pulled his laptop computer toward him. "What did you want to show me?" Jamie asked. "Any new species show up from the core samples?" "This is not biology," Fuchida said as he booted up the laptop. "No?" "No. Detective work." "Detective?" Jamie saw on the laptop screen one of the photos he had taken of the damaged garden dome the morning after the storm.
"Do you notice two important things in this image?"
Fuchida asked. His voice was low, almost a whisper. Jamie shook his head.
"Observe,"
the biologist said, pointing at the screen,
"that the dome fabric is puckered outward."
Nodding, Jamie said, "Yeah, it is, isn't it?"
"You took this image from outside the dome," Fuchida said.
"Right.
What does this outward-facing puckering suggest to you?"
"Christ," Jamie thought. Mitsuo sounding like an imitation Sherlock Holmes. "You tell me," he said.
"The puncture was made from the inside, not from the outside."
"No," Jamie said slowly. "That can't be.
What could puncture the dome from the inside?"
Instead of answering, Fuchida said,
"Observe the height of the puncture above the ground."
Jamie peered at the image. 2.5, 3 feet, I'd say.
62 centimeters. I have measured it.
"What are you driving at, Mitsuo?" Lowering his voice until it was almost a hiss, Fuchida answered,
"The storm did not damage the dome. The fabric was punctured from the inside, deliberately."
Jamie blinked at him.
"Deliberately? You're joking." "No joke. The puckering shows the puncture was made from inside the dome, not from outside. And the punctures are at the height a man's hand would be if his arm were fully extended downward."
It took Jamie several moments to realize that Fuchida was completely serious.
"Mitsuo, that can't be. Nobody here would deliberately damage the dome."
Fuchida pointed silently to the display screen.
Jamie said, "For one thing, the puckering makes it look like the damage was done from inside because air from inside the dome blew outward through the puncture."
The biologist's brows knit.
"That is a possibility, I suppose.
And the height of the punctures is just where the pebbles happen to hit the fabric."
"Both at the same height?"
Jamie shrugged. "A coincidence." Fuchida looked totally unconvinced.
"Listen, Mitsuo, you can't believe that one of us deliberately punctured the dome during the storm. That kind of behavior would be insane."
Fuchida nodded.
"That is exactly the conclusion I came to."
It was Vijay's turn for the cleanup detail. So while Stacy and Rodriguez went back to the comm center for a final evening's systems check and Fuchida and Trudy went off to the bio lab, Jamie went to his quarters and ran through his incoming messages. As he scanned the screen, his mind wandered to Fuchida's detective work. "Mitsuo's overreacting," he told himself. "Who the hell would deliberately puncture the garden dome? Why? For what reason? It's all nonsense." Still, the possibility was there, lurking in his mind like a dark, ominous cloud. A madman in our midst. Jamie shook his head, tried to clear his mind of the possibility. He finished scrolling through his messages, saw that there was nothing that demanded immediate action, then closed down the computer and went back to the galley. Vijay was still there. The dome lights were turned down to their overnight level. The dishwasher was humming away. The table was glistening clean. "She's waiting for me," Jamie thought happily. "Everybody else in bed?" he asked.
"Trudy and Rodriguez are," she replied lightly. "Mitsuo's still poking around out in the garden, and Stacy hasn't come out of the comm center."
"Oh." She took a mug and a tea bag and then went over to the hot water dispenser. Jamie pulled out a chair and sat in it. He knew it was silly, but he wanted to wait until all the others were in their quarters for the night before he took Vijay to his cubicle. "Mitsuo thinks somebody delivered..."